you will need those people. You will need people with that particular skill to come back. And if you are an organization that didn't treat people well, that will go around.
Hi, welcome to Change Out Loud, the podcast where change management intersects with everyday life. I'm Kara Sundar.
And I'm Adnan Ali. And today we have a guest, Dilly Ching from Sydney, Australia. Dilly has over 21 years of experience in contact center management and transformation within the aviation industry. Her clients have included Singapore Airlines, Thai Airways, Air New Zealand, just to name a few. She has previously held the role of Global Head of Operations and Commercial Partnerships and also has experience in travel startups. Dilly, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Kara.
We are so excited to have you on today. For today's episode, we are going to make the case for investing in your workforce. So it is an incredibly difficult market that many of you are operating in, especially in the travel, leisure, and hospitality industries. Companies are having to completely reimagine themselves and just how they do business with their customers. And this can also mean making cuts to staffing and reducing headcount. But what if, first, there were a way to redeploy the people you have today for the roles you need tomorrow? So Dilly, your work has always been very closely aligned to people. During your time managing customer contact centers, can you tell us more about just some of the firsthand experiences you've had where leaders have missed some of those enormous opportunities to leverage the talent pool and the capabilities of their existing workforce?
Yes, Adam, I would start with my work as a contact center manager. I was constantly dealing with people, and it's always exciting when we get a new airline because we're onboarding staff, we're training, and it is always exciting for the business and for the client. But what I feel we're lacking is when we lose a client or an airline customer, it is when we have to remove that headcount from the account. And the first thing that your manager or my manager would do is saying, where's the cost? Let's remove that associated cost with it. And my take at the time, I didn't have a voice as such. I was watching from the background when I would think, how else can we utilize this person, whether it is in the short term or in the long term? Being part of a major consortium in travel, which already had 15 or 18 umbrellas under its consortium, I felt we could have redeployed people because they had transferable skills, but it was not the culture of the business to redeploy. So when I would say, you know, why don't we upskill this person because we are getting a new airline or we may be getting another airline, we can use this language, it would always be, you know, let's look at the bottom line. What does a P&L say? This is where we need to kind of manage our costs. So the pivotal moment of my career was when I was appointed as Global Director of Operations, where I actually had a voice to the leadership team. And it was there that I made my point to them and saying, look, this is where we need to go. Look at your forward strategy. Look at, you know, what we can do with this person. Look at what their skills are to try and hold them on and redeploy them for 3 months, which we did when Hawaiian Airlines did have some changes made to its contact center. We had some processes that were refined. And as a result, we had 3 FTEs that we had to redeploy or reduce. So I took my idea to management and I said, this is what my plan is. Let's redeploy them to Qantas Holidays, which was part of the business entity. And we did that successfully. We were in a win-win situation because the staff, A, kept their long service. They learned a new skill in the wholesale division. And the company actually saved by redundancy costs. So we created that change and we created that culture. And going forward, we did look at that option. And redundancy was kind of the last option that we looked at.
For those 3 individuals that were redeployed, to your point, they were upskilled. They had learned a new capability. You were able to redeploy them. But also, I'm sure that instilled a great sense of loyalty from those 3 individuals in the organization that, wow, the organization is really taking the time to invest in me. And that must have been a huge boost to morale compared to the other option, which would have been to make them redundant.
Precisely, because we were part of a group of 50 within the organization. So word of mouth goes around and people seek culture, they feel culture, they feel secure. People working for the industry, for the airline industry particularly, are fiercely loyal. They're very resilient. But when it comes to redundancies, people are nervous. And finding a job in a similar space is not easy because movement is very slow. From a cultural perspective, people had a lot of respect for the business as well. And I think for managers to work with teams to try and extend their thinking and extend their skills and upskill them is huge.
So how did you make the case to management? You said you essentially had a seat at the table with the other leaders, but in past experience, saying it's the right thing to do is not always enough to tip the scales. So how did you make your case that upskilling and redeploying was actually going to really benefit your company?
Yes, that's a good question, Kara. So for me, it was looking at the statistics, looking at the data. So when we did those refinements, I knew that we would have to redeploy or we would have to get, we had to reduce our staff costs. So it was upfront with the management and I said, look, this is what my plan is. This is what we are going to do. This is the cost saving for the business as part of the technology, right? And when we looked at the team, there were teams who have been with us for 8 or 9 years at the time. And we looked at their skills. We also looked at the wider business. So Qantas Holidays at the time were recruiting and I had good relationships with my GM HR, and they were very much into, well, we haven't done this in the past. Let's give it a go. And I had to obviously convince the operations manager on the other side to say, look, I'm giving you my 3 best team players. I hate to lose them. You know, here are their KPIs. Here are the performance levels. You make that choice. And it was not easy because my senior leaders were hesitant because they did not want to pass on a problem to someone else, because what may fit with my business and our contact center may not be the same with what Qantas Holidays, for example, wanted. So it was a case of trying and testing. And I said, look, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. At least let's give it a go. Mm-hmm. And speaking to the teams, I said, here are my choices. You know, if I were you, I would be going with the redeployment because A, I will be upskilled. And it's a new, it's a new business, take mm-hmm. it as it is. And they obviously dwelled on it a couple of days and came back and said, look, love it, we'll do it, let's do it together. So it was a lot of collaboration, I would say, with these leaders. Mm-hmm. And I went in for all the interviews. I went in just to support the teams to make sure that they knew they had the backup. And they knew if it didn't work, they would be made redundant. It would not be considered as a voluntary departure. So we gave them the assurance and it's not easy. It's not easy because I spend a lot of time going, trying to mentor them and even, with the managers, because these girls are new and to that business and making sure that there was morning tea, we, try and assimilate it with the others. And, it worked really, really well.
What I love about your story is that you leveraged the data, but you also embraced experimentation. Mm-hmm. So you didn't know that it was necessarily going to work out. It could have been a terrible culture fit or just, not the ultimately the right fit for the job, but you gave the people the safety net. You gave their new employer the safety net. And it was a lot of collaboration and openness to experimentation. So I think that's just a great way to be successful in life. But in this business in particular, it sounds like it was really a win.
It was. And I think management looked at it there onwards in a very different manner, not just within my business, but with the other businesses as well. They said, look, if we can do it, the others could do it. And so it was also confidence to the team saying, if we do lose our jobs because we lost an airline, we have an opportunity to work elsewhere. And my manager is going to do all possible to try and get me that job.
Yeah. And I think what's so great about your story, Dilly, is again, the redeployment model is not the most common model that organizations use. It truly is the more cost savings model. As change managers, we go into these conversations early and we very much have these KPIs of there's X amount of dollars that we'd like to save. We think we're overstaffed in these areas. How do we then generate these cost savings? It's a very P&L and revenue and, you know, profit and loss driven viewpoint. So the redeployment model is completely new for many organizations. And it's honestly the more difficult route. You have to invest the time, you have to invest the energy in training people, in ensuring that they're a good cultural fit, that they have the support to just what you described. And that's not necessarily the easiest option, but in many ways, it's the option that feels right, right? It's the right thing to do, but also there's a strong business case. So for our change managers that are on the call, do you have any tips in addition to just the way you pitched this concept of redeployment to your stakeholders? Any additional just key takeaways you'd share with our listeners on how we can successfully pitch this to our stakeholders to make this redeployment model just more appealing all around?
Yeah, I think getting to know your team at a core level, not just for what they are employed to do today. They often have great experience, you know, which we don't know, all the hidden talents that they have. Get to know them, on, you know, sometimes as change managers, you're brought in to make that change. But I think taking the time with HR, co-partnering with HR to understand and see, you know, everyone brings value to the business. Look at what their human capital is, look at what their talent is, what they can offer. Have those chats with them. Ask them, you know, why they come to work each day, what fulfills them in doing their job. And you will notice that people want to be stretched, you know. For managers, I would say, you know, don't keep those conversations for appraisal time. You know, understand on a day-to-day basis what your teams would like to do as opposed to what they're currently doing. And try and give them more exposure. Try and build their talent. For me, that is a huge part. Having continued my learning with the AGSM at UNSW, that has become more important than ever to try and understand your team and try and know what they want, because they would want to know, want to do more. They would want to stretch their skills and they would love to be part of your strategy.
I think that's such a good point. I know in some of these conversations, what the decision makers will look at are job descriptions, or they'll look at roles and responsibilities as they're defined in a job description. But very oftentimes we don't ask the individual, hey, where are your interests? Where do you see yourself going? What would you like to do? If you look at a job description and truly people's passions and what they actually do on the job and what they bring, it's far more intricate and more complex than just what's typically listed bullet by bullet in a job description. So I just love that. Just really having a conversation with the individual to understand, you know, how they want to be stretched and where they can add additional value. That's such a great point.
Yeah. And even with those individuals who are highly talented, you know, don't feel afraid to ask for more responsibility. Mm-hmm. And look, that's how I grew up in this organization. I was just a contact center agent. And every 6 months I would go to my manager and say, look, I'm boarding this job. What else can I do? Can I help you with this? Or, you know, can I be exposed to another area? So at the end of my 21 years at World Aviation Systems, I ended up as Global Head of Operations and Commercial Partnerships, two diverse portfolios. But I was able to leverage that with my commercial negotiations with airlines. When they talked about contact center manager, how would you represent us? What would you do? I would off the bat tell them how I would plan their contact center. Otherwise, my GM would have had to say, wait, let me get her online. Let me see what she says, you know, and I'm not in present moment. So for me, it was, I really enjoyed it, having to negotiate with the airline partners and tell them what contact center they would get at that point of negotiation.
So I love what you're saying about getting to know your individual team. I'm thinking we may have some executives that are listening and they are more at the level where you can't individually know every employee. Maybe that rolls up to you. But what you can know is you know, the trends you're seeing strategically, and maybe 3 to 5 years down the road, the skills that your workforce is going to need that might be different than today. So I'm just curious, between the three of us, if we can come up with some ideas of how an executive might approach the upskilling journey with trends that they're seeing. I'll say that my employer that I'm with now, this is a huge issue around digitization skills and digital acumen, making sure that everyone in the company understands how to visualize data and how to leverage data, you know, because that's the future of leadership, at least, and being able to help people make decisions. So I think that is something any industry can use right now. But how would you recommend that an executive might think about the trends that they're seeing in the world and translating that into the skills they might need to be building currently?
That's such a great point, because we are in a digitized world as we speak, and everything is data-driven, Kara. So for me, going back in my previous role, we would see the trends. We'd see whether it is core trends, whether it is sales trends, whether it is customer experience trends. Looking at that, and you also see team performance side by side, and you know who your high performers are, you know what they do. Line managers should be very closely aligned with the strategy, because they are in the forefront to advise or to influence leaders as to where their skills are, where the hidden talents are, and how to approach that. And it goes back to your, you know, position description. Look at these individuals, you know, capabilities, not just from the front of what they are doing today, but what they would like to do tomorrow, and have that open conversation. I would always say, even with data and metrics, have it transparent. You know, usually they are all data in my previous positions would be only available to the leadership team. You know, so no one knows how the company is going, you know, once in a quarter or once in 6 months. You know, you'd get an email saying, yeah, the company's down, the company's up. But if you're sitting at a contact center and you're having hundreds and hundreds of calls being serviced, in your head, you're thinking, my God, the company's making a lot of money, but we're actually performing non-revenue generating functions, which is servicing the customer. And, you know, you can't put a value on that, but at the same time, you're not making money, right? So it's, people are at a different place. But if you actually, you know, are open and transparent with your teams can actually give you a lot of clues as to, you know, what your competitor is doing, you know, how we can thrive in our business, what else can we do in order to, you know, be best place in the market.
Mm. Yeah, I think a big part of it is including the people who are closer to the customer and really their voice, because they are a great representation. If you don't have the customer's voice, they're a great proxy to what the customer is thinking and what the customer needs, because they're the ones working with the customer on a day-to-day. I mean, if you ask me, you know, what I need to upskill on to best support my customers, I could probably tell you, because I know where I could be better or where what my customer demands and what I need. So I think that's such a good point. How can we create these inclusive change journeys where we're having conversations and the feedback truly is a 360 feedback model? It's not just we're asking one or two individuals, or we're looking at just revenue numbers, which again, miss out on this bigger picture customer experience, which is so much more than just revenue, right? It's maybe you help retain revenue. You're not necessarily adding revenue, but you kept the customer happy and they didn't leave or they didn't go anywhere. Are we tracking that, or the fact that, you know, a customer you may not have maybe sold them this first time, right? This first time you had a great experience with them, they're not sold just yet, but they come back a year or two later. It's hard to track those types of metrics. So I love this idea of doing a 360 model of feedback where you're asking different individuals. I think the other thing with executives that might work well for some of our change managers on the call is, usually if you're going to recruit these positions later for these upskilled roles, there is a very tangible real cost. So if I have to go out in the market and I have to, you know, put out ads, I have to interview people, leverage HR or even recruitment agencies, there is a very hard cost to doing that. And then you bring them on board, they have the skills, but they might not know the organization and how the policies and procedures of that organization work. So there's this time that's really spent on upskilling them to the company they're coming into. So usually those metrics can be tracked, and there is some very tangible data that you can provide of, well, I can bring this talent in, but it's going to take 3 or 4 months to get them to where I need to get them, or I can invest those 3 or 4 months upskilling the talent I have today. And I already know how these people perform. I already know that they understand my customer and that they're doing their job well. So I'd rather do that than take the risk of going out into the market, spending all of this money, and it still may not be a good fit.
And two, I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for them to step away from their role, do some kind of certification program or something that's going to actually skill them up to the exact needs that you have. And you won't then have to pay the premium of going to the market, hiring somebody from the outside, training them for what you need, just because you need that one certification, right? Like the cost benefit there is so clear to me. And I guess I'm curious to hear about the long-term impacts of that. You know, you said the team was very positive about it. They were glad to see these folks. But, you know, talk to us about several months later, the people are no longer there. There may have been other shifts in the market. What do you think was kind of the long-term impact to that team of seeing redeployment rather than redundancy?
I think, Kara, redeployment, when people see people move, they know that they're being moved for a reason because they're being redeployed and they're upskilled. There have been teams who have come to me when they know that the airline is not going well, they know we might be moving, and it is a case of having that conversation with me before I could have the conversation with them, and, you know, to the effect of, hey, we're going to lose this. What are your plans for me? And I'm in a tough situation because I have thought about it, but I haven't verbalized it to anyone. It has been within me and it has been part of my plan. So it's, you know, A, letting them know we will take care of you, giving them, you know, the answer of you have a job. I don't know what that job will look like now, but I will tell you that you have a job, so you don't have to worry for now. But then I would have to, you know, create a plan, go to my managers and say, look, we've got to work on this. We've got to get rid of 3 people and or 2 people or whatever the case may be. How can we leverage this? What can we do? And so teams, they didn't have that uncertainty, that anxiousness when we had to lose airline, because they knew at some point that they would be taken care of. They would be upskilled, and we did invest a lot of money in upskilling people, provided they were up for the challenge. So it's having those conversations saying, look, we don't have this kind of job for you going forward. Here's what we think will be good for you. What do you say? Because then I would look at their resume and say, look, you've got these skills already. You haven't used them. How about, you know, trying this, you know, at a different department? And, you know, people are very loyal. They say, ah, oh, but who's the manager? What's the manager like? You know, all of those kind of things. And you'd say, no, you know, he or she is really good. You can always be in touch, you know, try and enjoy the journey because you're part of the business, you know, and they're fiercely loyal. They would, you know, take that challenge just because you've sold it to them. You've convinced them that if, you know, they don't like it, we'll look at something else. But it's not about, you've got to fit in also, because people are investing that time to train you and they would expect you to stay for at least 6 to 8 months in that role, unless, of course, you know, there is a problem and you really don't like what you're doing. So it's two-way. I don't think it's a one-way street. People have also got to love what they're doing. Very important.
And what an empowered position to be in. I know for many organizations that might lose a big customer or this looming redundancy can be lingering, there is a sense of fear that people have. And it creates, I think, a paralysis in many workforces where people are just waiting for the day for the announcements to happen. And maybe it's on a staggering basis. It can truly paralyze an organization and the productivity and just the morale. So I just love what you've described here. It sounds like a very empowered workplace where there's a shared understanding of the marketplace, the clients, and also that no matter what happens, the company will invest in me and I have an opportunity to upskill and to be redeployed. That just because things don't go well necessarily doesn't mean that, you know, I will be left out on my own. I have the support of my leadership and I have the support of my organization. So I love that. I think in these conversations, I think the empowerment often gets lost. So it's great to see that, you know, truly you have an empowered workplace.
Yes, I would say so. And it's a culture you keep building. But it's also the leadership at the top. They've got to believe in that, because if they don't, it cascades down and people are not going to hang around as soon as the opportunity comes. Even if they know that they're not going to be made redundant, they will just leave because they know they're not going to be looked after. So it's very important to keep that talent in market.
Yeah. So I know then for some organizations, even if you do redeploy some of your talent, there still might be a need to make a few individuals redundant. It's just unavoidable. For those situations where, unfortunately, it's just a reality, it has to happen, you've tried redeployment, you've tried other options, do you have any best practices in terms of just how to go about doing that in a way that does maintain the loyalty and the morale of the workforce that you have remaining in the organization, but also the people who have left, that there isn't that sense of resentment? Are there any best practices that you'd like to share?
Thanks, Adnan. I think COVID-19 has brought about a lot of change, a lot of tough decisions that businesses have had to make, particularly in the travel and the airline industry. So I was obviously part of that experience myself. And I believe, you know, it's not just reading a script on the other end of the phone and telling people you're being made redundant because of COVID-19. It is tough, and I don't doubt that in any way, but you can do it in a very human way. You can be authentic. You have to have that human element and that empathy in you when delivering it. And I have had to deliver some of those messages. And, you know, when I've been given the script, I just look at it and I, you know, leave it aside. And I said, I'm just going to be myself. I'll just tell them exactly what it is, how it is, even though HR is by my side, you know, like trying to tell me, read off the script and read the T's and C's. I'm not interested in that. I just have to tell them exactly what it is from my heart. Be human about it. You know, don't leave people scarred. And for the rest of those who are left behind, even though you think they don't know, they feel it, they speak. And what is that, you know, what is that culture you want to leave behind? You know, people will move on. The industry is going to, you know, get back, but you will need those people. You will need people with that particular skill to come back. And if you are an organization that didn't treat people well, that will go around. The travel industry is very small.
And there's a saying out there that, you know, I might not remember what you did to me, but I'll remember how you made me feel. And people certainly hold on to just how people made them feel. So I just love that, you know, you set the script aside, because I've also gone through a similar experience, and I had a very caring leader. I think very much wanted to do the right thing. And, you know, he very much read off the script. and it was only when we went off script where I was like, oh, you know, I completely understand this decision. It's not personal. I get it. I still value you as a leader. I understand that this has nothing to do with me. It's truly, it's just the business environment that we're in. And once we're able to step away from the script, things just felt natural and normal and not so constructed in a box, right? So I just really appreciate that you did that for the people that you were having to have those very challenging conversations with. Well, Dilly, thank you so much for coming onto the show today. I think this is a topic that's very top of mind for many change managers and also just many professionals and executives in the current climate that all of us are currently in. So we appreciate you coming onto the show. Dilly, tell us more about where people can reach out to you if they would like to engage you for consulting.
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. So look up my LinkedIn profile, Dilly Chang, and, you know, connect with me, and I'm happy to, you know, have that conversation with you.
Great. So we'll include Dilly's contact information in our show notes. And we want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. And thank you, Dilly. Thank you, Kara. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Kara. Thank you, Edlyn.